And hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 20th, 1998, and in the Creekside room this evening we have Anne Hafton, and she's leading a session on media literacy, spiritual literacy. This is tape number HAA98-1. So let's tune in on Anne as she conducts the discussion.
I've been a resident and guest here at the Village for some years. That doesn't give me any credentials to talk about this kind of thing, because Holden Village is a place where you can very successfully hide out from the media. But in my outside life, I'm a communication professional working in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. I'm the news director in the Department for Communication. And my job is to provide linkage between the ELCA and the secular media, newspapers, journalists, news columnists, religion reporters, and the like. And that's not what I'm going to talk about here either, but I wanted to just give you a little understanding of kind of how I tapped into an interest in this. I've been looking at issues of attentiveness to the media and discernment and criticism around the media for some time, and had some ideas I thought I'd try sharing with you all. You can see I put at the top of the chart here, television, movies, music, computers, newspapers, magazines, radio. There are lots of other forms of media, but these are probably among the most dominant. Just to get started, tell me, think a minute, and then tell me the last form of media that you experienced, that you have experienced. For some of you, it'll be before you got to Holden, or maybe you read the paper since you got here, but let's think back to the last. Yes?
Computer programming.
Okay. Computers.
Mm-hmm. Magazine.
Yeah. Newspaper.
Newspaper, okay.
Noon announcements.
Yeah, the media at Holden announcements.
The media at Holden.
Uh huh.
Radio.
Radio, what was it? National Public Radio. That would have been my answer, too. Last thing I do in the morning before I leave the house, listen to National Public Radio.
Yeah.
Nobody watched the Bulls game?
I watched.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm from Chicago. Well, these are some examples. Some of you might have said morning TV, TV news shows before you got on the bus. Maybe you watched it in the motel, or might have gone to a movie the night before coming up here. Somebody said they went online, and that's usually the second to the last thing I do before I leave the office, is go online one more time, see if I have any computer messages in my email inbox. I'm also a newspaper and radio news junkie, so I'm addicted to that. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the resources I'm using here. Just some of them I've used for background, and just to get you acquainted with them so you can decide if you want to use them or not. I went to the Oxford Fortress folks, and they supplied me with a few pieces that you might look into. This is a kind of outdated copy of the Youth Talk curriculum dealing with media, Voices and Messages, it's called. I found this kind of helpful, but astonishingly dated. It was published only about 5 years ago, and most of the most of the movies and TV shows they're talking about were already 5 years old. Not the best way to talk about media. You have to be pretty current. These other two youth Bible studies from Augsburg Fortress, one called Is It Me? Media and the Individual, the other Are We Listening? Media and Society, might be useful to you if you want to pursue some work with this in your own congregation. I found them to be critical of the media in a taking a stance, saying setting up the youth versus the media. The media is lying to you. You need to be a strong individual. I think there's a little bit more to that, more to it than that, and I'll talk about that a bit tonight. And one of my main resources is my new favorite book, which is not in the bookstore, but I recommend it to you. It's not the book you read cover to front to back, but one that you dip into for resources, for quotations, for ideas. It's called Spiritual Literacy, and it's the other half of the name of this session, Media Literacy, Spiritual Literacy. It's edited by Frederick and Marianne Broussard. You might recognize the name of Marianne Broussard from the Lutheran Magazine, where she writes a column on popular culture. These two have prepared a wonderful compendium of quotes and ideas and ways to use books and movies and TV to apply them to your own spiritual life or to your teaching or to your ministry. So I'll be dipping into this a bit too, and I commend this to you. It's expensive, but one copy in your church library would be a good idea. So each time we encounter these media products, and let's face it, most of what we see, everything we see in the media is a product or is carrying a product or is telling you about a product. Of course, one thing we can do is just sort of take it in passively, but I'm suggesting that we might act on in a response to some of those encounters. One thing we can do is theological reflection. We can look at a piece, a TV show or a movie, or listen to a piece of music with some discernment and listen and see what is in there that might be useful, what is in there that is the gospel, even accidentally. What is there in there that is distinctly not the gospel? And how can we make that discernment? And it takes a bit of deep listening and careful watching, but that's one thing we can do. And we're all prepared to do that. We know the gospel when we hear it, and we can tell when it's being betrayed. Second is to think about how we use media. What are the ways that it's a tool for us? Are we getting entertained? Are we having someone, having company, being kept company? Or when we use a piece of media, think to yourself, how am I making use of this? A third thing is to think about how the media is using us. Because every time you turn on your computer and get the World Wide Web, there's ads. You've seen them. Lots and lots of commercials right there. Of course, television is full of commercials. And more and more television programming and even movies are also selling products as teams have sponsorships. And it's a very old thing. The Texaco Theater is probably one of the oldest, and before that, radio. But, where the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by... I don't remember who, but there was some car company probably that sponsored that. It was then shown on PBS. So, it's all entangled, and it's all finding out how to use, it's all using itself to get to you. And fourth, look for choices and opportunities as they present themselves in the messages and in the media themselves. And see if you can form a new relationship with the media that is more mutual, that might not be so much about them using us. And I do not set up the media as an enemy. I'm part of it, and I use it as best I can to further the witness of the ELCA. But my premise here in this little session is that we can use the material that comes to us through the media. We can mine it for our own spiritual resources and for our teaching and for our ministry.
Would you define media?
Well, this is a start.
How are you thinking about it?
This is a start. I'm not thinking of, when I'm talking about it, I'm not thinking of high art. I'm not thinking of the Museum of Modern Art. I'm thinking of popular means of getting information, entertainment, and products to you. So that includes the news. We'll get to that in a minute. Let me ask you how you use the media. Give me some ideas of what you think you use the media for. And I'll write them down.
I watch the morning news.
But what are you getting from that?
Information. Find out what the weather's going to be today.
Information.
Thank you. Another one.
Entertainment.
Uh-huh.
Education.
Uh-huh.
Relaxation.
Helps with planning. Uh-huh. I have some people who use it to stay awake while they're driving.
Yeah. How about while they're studying? Yeah. staying awake. What else?
Contact with people through email.
Mm-hmm. Communication.
Communication.
Does anybody use the media for company? Just to have someone else around the house. I leave the radio on for that reason. Anyone?
Yeah. We use it for procrastination, so we don't do what we're supposed to be doing.
Okay.
Sometimes for spiritual nurturing, like music, I think music sometimes does that.
Okay, good. That's heartening.
I think sometimes for connection, that we're watching or listening to things that other people that we know also listen to and watch, and then afterward we can talk about the similar experiences, the different experiences we have with those things. So it's a way to connect, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that one.
The way that we both watched or the Bulls game. They won in six games, so we didn't miss the seven.
Yeah, I like that very much. And also to be, you know, so that when you encounter your friends, that you have some commonality, both
right.
Same information.
One word communication with anything Seinfeld.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And also it can be a shared experience at the time.
Uh-huh.
When you watch it or listen to it with a group of people, or if you read an article out of a newspaper or a magazine,
uh-huh.
to someone it's a joint.
Right, sharing, experiencing the same thing, right.
We're actually getting less of that all the time, though, aren't we? I mean, it's fragmented now.
It's fragmented?
For years and years and years and years, we watched, let's say, three networks.
Mm-hmm. We had more in common.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We had a commonality, and then now it's all, there's so many stations, and we're all looking at different things, and it's, when you come to work in the morning and you're talking about coffee, I mean, it's difficult to find somebody that saw what you saw.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean, because I had a little conflict a few years ago with two of my goals. One of my ongoing goals is to stay in touch. I like to know what's going on, and I like to know what's going on in popular culture. And yet, I also had kind of a commitment to a certain level of simple living. So I only got my first VCR 3 years ago, and I still don't have cable, and I've never had cable. And so all the while I was kind of thinking, well, you know, I really don't need cable. And this, now I realize how far behind I am. I don't know anything about things that have been broadcast on cable for the last at least 10 years that people have had in their home, and they are shared experiences that I'm not taking part in. So that was a problem. I use the media for community. I'm single. I live alone in the city. And I find that there are some people on TV who are my pals. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. I think the community I've most grieved, other than leaving Holden ever, has been the loss of the Northern Exposure community. My heart, you know, it's like I can't go back to Sicily. And that was really hard. And I think we, maybe you don't want to admit it, but my friend teases me, because one time we came back from a long drive from Appleton, Wisconsin to Chicago, and he said, "Do you want to get some dinner?" And I said, "Yeah, but it's got to be quick, because I got to go home and spend some time with my TV friends." And he said, "You're the only person I know that would admit that." But it's true. I'm connected to some of those people, and they're part of my community.
You can reconnect if you buy cable. They're doing reruns.
Salvation.
But you know, and I have that kind of relationship, this is even worse, with characters in books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, they're, you know, I can reacquaint myself with them at any time that I choose to take it off the shelf.
Yeah, but I have two.
There are times when I just need to spend another afternoon with Emma. And I do it a lot.
Yeah, I think that's very true, yes.
An emotional release. Sometimes if,
right.
If a lot of things, my personal life had me all bogged stuff, I could watch a particular movie or listen to certain music and it will allow me to release those things.
Mm-hmm. I'll put my abbreviation for the movie over here. Well, let's go on. I'm not going to do a lot of talking here. Well, maybe I will, but I want to give you... I want to give you a little rundown on what might be some tips for kind of managing your media use, and me too. And then I'll go off of this just talking. But there are some steps that I've kind of gotten interested in. One is, it's possible to plan and make decisions about TV viewing. And TV is probably the most addictive or difficult of our relationships with the media, if we have one. There are decisions you can make looking at, rather than just turning it on and flipping around, you can decide, I want to watch this game, I want to watch this special, this children's programming is important to our family, and think it through and make some decisions and some choices. That's one way to manage it. Another is to set some family guidelines. If you are living in a family unit, you can decide what kind of content you want for your family viewing, how much time you want to spend on it, what amount of time. And then think about enjoying it together. I'm going to go out on a limb and incriminate one of my sisters here, because I often visit her house, and the kids are watching TV, and then she and I are talking. And one time, a few years ago, the television was showing The Wizard of Oz, which we always watched as a family when I was growing up. And I said, let's watch it. Let's all be together. How would that be? We could all have this shared experience, the kids, she and I. And the only problem was the kids couldn't understand why we couldn't rewind it and do that part again or pause it so they could go to the bathroom. But anyway, it was a great, it was like a breakthrough. Let's do this together as an activity. And then third, think about making the TV you watch and the movies and magazines you read sort of interactive, so that it's not just passive. You're not just opening yourself up and saying, dump in your content on me, I'm taking it. And just be a little more interactive with it. One is to look deeply at the story. If it's fiction, if it's a short story in a magazine, or if it's a TV show, even when you watch regularly, look into the content of that story and see what's really going on, and then think about how it makes you feel. That's one way to be a little interactive with it. And then talk back. I do this in my own house and I'm alone. I just argue with the TV. If it doesn't make any sense, argue with it and protest if it's unnecessarily violent or crude or it's offended you in some way. And third, talk about it with others. I love to talk about movies with my friends. One of my favorite things to do is to sit around in a restaurant and just hash over who's seen which movies and what did they like about them and what didn't they like about them. It's much more fun than just sitting at home with a whole stack of videos all by myself. I'm interested in if my friends found any value in a movie that I thought was detestable, or we can agree about something or disagree. I'd like to get their points of view. And then two other kind of preachy ones, but one is allow the TV, radio, and computers and other media to expand your world. I'm a pretty famous know-it-all, and I often think I've got the parameters of the information I need, and that'll be just fine. But really, you can push it out a bit. And I've expanded in the last couple of years into more use of computers, and it's not going to be the most fun thing in the world for me, but I've certainly learned a lot from it. I've expanded my world. And then fifth, be positive about the media's contribution to the world. It isn't only the demonic force, behind misinformation. There is a lot more information shared among the peoples of the world than there ever has been before. And I think we can only benefit from knowing what we know. If we hadn't seen those images from the Tiananmen Square, for example, what would we know about the state of China, just as an example? I think that increased information is always good. That's why I went into journalism. So there is a positive side, and think a little positively about it. Now, my business is news, so I thought I'd better tackle news first. TV, magazines, radio, newspapers, these are all commodities. And all the news you get on TV in any of these sources is a product. This is a commodity that is being marketed and packaged to and sold to you, particularly TV news, and particularly your local TV news, is really seeking to fulfill the audience's desires, and how that TV station or radio stations are the same way. Understand our wishes to be as their market audience. They are doing extensive and expensive research to tell them what we want, and they're giving it to us, and we have to own that. They are not foisting something on us that their research hasn't shown that audiences want, which is lots of pictures, lots of action. There's no, it's not a mystery that the correlation of is there between the growth of action movies from the oldest Sly Stallone movies to the most contemporary Bruce Willis or whoever, and TV news also showing us more car chases and more wrecks and burning. There's an obviously correlation there, I think. Also, the TV news is not a mirror. And I think I find this comforting. It's more of a prism. I mean, you see things through it, but it's not going to show you your life, because for the most part, we don't find ourselves in those settings, like in an airport where someone thrusts a microphone in your face and asks you how you feel about the plane crash. It's showing us an image of the culture that research has shown that we want to see, and that's somewhat frightening. We can know that they will show more conflict and more violence than proportionately is really, I'm not saying it's not going on, it is, but they're showing us a lot more of it. They'll always open up the newscast with something either showing people struggling, either shouting at each other or fighting, or some other kind of physical image, because television is about visual images. So sadly, if you're not careful and don't look discern and look carefully, TV news will confirm your fears. It has the power to make us feel more fearful about our society and each other as a community than we need to. It will show more violence, conflict, and antisocial behavior than any of us would find in our normal day-to-day life in our neighborhood or where we work. It also increases our fear of becoming a victim, and that's another danger. And a third is it desensitizes us to victims. And that has also been shown, that victims of car accidents or muggings and so forth are shown over and over and over again. Well, after a while, it's just another android being thrown across the screen in a science fiction show. It doesn't have reality because we've become desensitized to it. It also increases our appetite for violence. So these are all ways to be critical about that. And there's lots of positive ways to read the news. I hardly read, I mean, you pick and choose. I hardly read any local news because I happen to be interested in international news. But hey, at least I'm reading something. I think it's a good idea to read, listen, and watch. Get a little from each source. And again, make discerning choices and listen carefully. If you don't believe something, if you're skeptical about something, then read more or listen further or find another source. Because, even National Public Radio, which is almost like God to me, they make mistakes. And I often find, by looking at another source, that it's not quite like that. There's another slant, another take on the same story. News reporters and news executives are just trying to present a story that you're going to want to keep watching long enough for that commercial to come on. And that's the whole goal. A resource for this that you might want to use in your home congregations or in another community setting is prepared by the Mennonites. It's called News Fact or Fiction. And it's a video that is very good, and it's available through Mennonite Communications. I'm going to move on from the news because I know if I open it up, it'll suck up all our time. But does anyone have an absolutely burning news comment they have to make, Bob? All right.
Since you put it that away.
Yeah. Go ahead, Cliff.
Well, I think the 10 o'clock news at home is just the most awful thing. I refuse to watch it. It's just all car chases or violence or somebody got killed or something like that. And there may be 30 seconds of political news or, what's going on like that. Anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I know what you mean. What city do you live in?
Austin.
Austin, Texas.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah, when I first moved to Chicago, I found local news so depressing.
Terrible.
Spiritually, I couldn't cope with it. I started to get depressed and spiral down. But I try to discipline myself to watch a bit of it.
But our homebound, our shut-ins, are living it.
And imagine how that feeds their fears, especially if they're isolated or alone or infirm.
And it worries them.
Mm-hmm, sure, and it worries them greatly. Well, a couple days ago, Paul Olson did a wonderful literature piece on how to tell the junk from what's great. And I took a little bit from that. He admitted he had the wrong crowd, because when you ask a Holden audience what they watch on TV, you get Masterpiece Theater and the McNeil Error Report. And what he was going for was a little bit more on the junky side. Now, probably nobody here watches Jerry Springer, but maybe you do, and if you don't want to admit it, that's okay. I made a list of a few forms of media that someone might consider junk. And I'm going to make a list and see if you can match up some of the ones that I identified. So what would you consider pure junk?
Jerry Springer.
All right. He leads everyone's list.
I mean, it's worse than junk.
Yeah. It could be like downright evil, but we'll stick with junk for now.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
What?
I'll allow these two personalities. Beyond this, let's stick with types of media.
Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, that's another individual.
Commercial.
All right, I'll allow Beavis.
Now there's a new one on cable also that's of similar genre. What's it called? South Park?
Park. That's the same thing.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now some people wouldn't consider that junk, but some would, so that's fine. So it doesn't have to be
absolute junk.
We don't have to have consensus.
Stuff that comes on AOL when I'm trying to get in to do my email. And
what do you call that? So it's like cookies?
Those little ads.
Cookies
are
spam.
Spam
and cookies are both junk. Okay, tabloids.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Some people have made a whole ministry out of that.
Those news programs that really aren't news, they're entertainment.
Infomercials?
But they keep...
Oh, those entertainment
ones.
Oh,
the ones, yeah.
Well, let's call it hard copy just to kind of slander them, but, you know, that's we all know what that's shorthand for. Entertainment news that isn't really news at all.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said infomercials, but...
Yeah, infomercials. What about talk radio? Well, it only has to be junk to you.
Hey, it's very handy for staying awake in the car, you know.
Yeah.
not all that.
This guy, that's exactly what I use it for. I listen to talk radio on nights that I'm having trouble getting home. In the dark, you know, from someone's house, and it's late, and I'm sleepy. Yeah. What about, you know, the kind of what I called airplane novels or beach novels? You know, just kind of junky, you know, romances and action mysteries.
Correct.
I call them beach novels.
Zane Grey.
How about action movies?
Yeah.
That's sort of quote unquote too, action movies.
Most ads.
Shopping channels.
Oh. Ads? Shopping. I hadn't thought of that. The shopping channel, okay.
Movie previews, they move so fast and they're so loud it kind of extends.
Yeah, I love those previews, so they're not junk to me, but they are to you. How about science fiction? Some people think science fiction is a cult, and it shouldn't even be on.
Someone's very good.
Yeah, but someone would consider it junk.
Yeah.
How about soap operas? And
okay, I'm gonna step out and say that Masterpiece Theater.
But some of the overtly religious programs on
I'll just put some
anything America.
Yeah, thank you. Michael.
Is that our Canadian?
Yes. I'll tell you a few others. Like, I thought those teen slasher movies might qualify. Very, very popular. They're making a lot of money. They're also called teen picks. Movies that are designed with young, kind of attractive teenage actors, either in like funny romantic stories or slasher. You know, they all get their heads cut off at some point in the movie. Some of them get that sewed back on. Some people might consider comic books or the funny pages to be junk. Some people might consider fashion magazines to be just all ads, so they must be just junk.
Yes.
Or the Sunday morning political shows, where everyone sits around and yells at each other, their polarized points of view. I consider that to be real, pure junk. And another of my favorite junks, business magazines. So are these the lowest of the low?
Oh no.
Is there anything
made? Anything made by Microsoft.
Okay. Does someone... Any of these things might have some value to someone. This is a little bit of a dangerous premise, but I think there's something in even this junky stuff. Maybe, you know, I just don't know. I don't watch it enough, and I'm just guessing that there might be something in there. For me, it's might be science fiction. I love science fiction. I watch all the sci-fi shows, love The X-Files, and have the next thing out, the next that comes out of that genre. I'm always entertained by it, and my friends are horrified. You know, why am I wasting time watching that? But I love it, and I find messages and meaning, and I get something out of it. I think there is good stuff in there if you are willing to look for it. Now, I'm not saying everyone needs to run out and buy Vogue, but this summer I picked up a copy of Vogue that was I found in the luggage return area in Chicago O'Hare Airport. And, you know, I found a fascinating article in there about a woman photojournalist who has spent her career photographing some of the most difficult settings, including Sarajevo and Cambodia and other places, and I knew nothing about this woman and her work, and I was just fascinated by it. I also get a kick out of looking at ads, so I enjoyed paging through all the advertising, but, you know, if I just said, oh, you know, that has no value. As a genre, that fashion magazines and $450 or whatever they cost now, I never would have bought it. But, you know, I found something in there that really spoke to me. It was very interesting, and I'm sticking with this idea that grace notes can be found. I'm sure someone finds a grace note in the business journals once in a while. I want to talk a little bit about TV and another resource that you might take note of if you want to think about using, do some work with television and children. The United Church of Christ has a video and a study guide for 9 to 11-year-olds called Kids Talk TV. And I've seen this, reviewed it, and it's really very good. So if you wanted to use some, I can give you these details later if you're interested in it. But that's the UCC's product, and it's quite good on addressing TV issues with that age group. Well, some facts that are kind of interesting about TV. There are some recent research indicated that 71% of U.S. children say that the role of a boss on TV is played by a white actor. And 59% of children say the role of a criminal on TV is usually played by a black actor. Those are pretty high numbers. 59% of kids think black actors play criminals, and that's it. And advertising, I know I enjoy ads. I think they're kind of an art form, but you've got to be careful when you realize that it's estimated that about 3,000 messages, one way or another, reaches the group that the marketers consider youth, which is everybody from 11 to about 19. 3,000 messages a day through every form that we've already talked about. Now, the research on media varies. There's no consensus. I read in one of these Augsburg books an indictment talking about the Vietnam War, and the way this certain piece of research had been done on violence around that was portrayed during the Vietnam War years. And two different bodies of research showed two completely different things. One showed that the repeated showing of graphic scenes of war on the news during the Vietnam War years, which is when I was in high school, desensitized viewers to violence and made it irrelevant, so that they didn't see it anymore. It was just going by like cornflake commercials. A whole separate body of research shows that it was that very repeated showing of the horrors of war during the Vietnam War that brought about some of the social change movements and brought it to the attention of the average family that there was a very serious body count going on halfway around the world. So two views, they're both research, but I think either way, what it points to is my point, which is looking at stuff carefully and making judgments about it and saying, how does this affect me? What does this mean? Or what do I need to find out more about? TV, in its dramas and sitcoms, presents both the new and the familiar. I think we watch it to see people we know, and we watch it to see a diversity of people that are unlike us, that live other kinds of lives. I like the shows that I learn from are tend to be those nature shows. That's my favorite type of program to kind of zone out on. You know, look at those ants. They're really busy there. And that's very relaxing to me. I also like any show about history, and I like biographies and shows about other people's lives or fiction that looks into other people's lives. For the sake of talking about religion on TV, I'll put a couple things on the table right away. In the recent last couple of years, we've had a big growth in religious themes on TV. And so, use a different color. There are a couple shows that people are talking about right now in terms of religion and TV drama. One is Nothing Sacred. And that came out this past year and has now died, although there are several unaired episodes that they're talking about running on cable or PBS or something. It was a drama about a priest, a bunch of priests and those people. And then there's people in a Catholic congregation. And there's a show called Seventh Heaven, which is a family drama, kind of a family story. And then there's Touched by an Angel, which you can't leave out and talk about this kind of thing. These are all shows that have dabbled with using religious themes in primetime TV. And one of them Nothing Sacred received fabulous critical review. Critics loved it, and it didn't sell enough. I mean, not enough people were watching it, and it died.
One analysis I read, it was killed by decisions to put it in places where people wouldn't.
Yeah, it was in very weak scheduling positions. You couldn't keep track of it. You never knew where it was. But in the early years, Star Trek suffered the same fate. Seventh Heaven is a show that's building an audience. It's a big family. The father's a pastor. The religious messages are not overt. They're just sort of values. The fact that the father's a pastor kind of plays into the storylines, but it's about family issues and what happens, all kinds of issues with getting along in a family and in a community. They've had some very, very strong episodes, too. One particularly strong one that's won a lot of awards, dealing with the Holocaust and memories of the Holocaust. And then Touched by an Angel, which is a phenomena unlike anything else, something that's set out to be overtly religious. The producers and writers said, let's do something that really talks about God in this sort of phantasmagorical setting with these various angels. I'm not going to go into which ones of these I like and don't like, but I think Touched by an Angel is almost more like a Bible study than any of these other shows. And I put them out here because I wanted to get them on the table because that's not what I really want to talk about. Just wanted to kind of dispose of those. This is a growing phenomena, or maybe with the death of nothing sacred, it won't grow, but Hollywood has figured out that people are interested in religion and spiritual values, and they're trying to figure out how to tap into that and get us watching. So that'll be interesting to follow up on now in the years to come. But what I'm interested in is the way that grace kind of inadvertently shows itself in regular programming that isn't really setting out to be religious. And I think these are accidents, frankly. I don't think most of these writers that are writing TV screenplays are thinking about injecting a word of grace or faith or perseverance or God into their shows, but they just seem to happen sort of accidentally. The Broussards, in one of their early introductions, talked about a program that I watch pretty frequently, NYPD Blue.
I just said that.
And I have found some of those programs, it's a cop show, it's quite violent, it's difficult, it's really adult, it's an adult program. And they have had many occasions when they've dealt with religious themes, always kind of as a subtext, but it's in there. I serve on the jury for the National Wilbur Awards, which is the Religious Public Relations Council presents awards each year to various media that reflect religious values. In 97, we gave our television drama award to NYPD Blue for an episode where one of the characters, Andy Sipowicz, is a pretty tough, you know, cranky, crotchety old cop who's he's pretty cynical, and his son has been killed, and at the same time, his new wife has a new baby, and this new baby is scheduled for baptism, and she's Greek Orthodox, and he's been trying, and you've kind of, in the course of the series, seen him visiting in the premarital counseling with the Orthodox priest, and they have this new baby, but he is just devastated by the death of his adult son. And the program we gave the award to was one where he was struggling to cope with this grief, and at the conclusion of the show, there's this beautiful scene of a baptism in the Greek church, and I don't think worship could be done more beautifully. As the couple and the baby proceed down the aisle, the priest speaks a word to them, and a word of scripture and prayer at each point, 3 points down to the crossing, and then the baptism takes place, and as the new baby is being baptized, Andy offers his own prayer and says, please look out for my other son. It was very, very moving and a beautiful scene of a baptism that you don't see on TV drama very often. Now, that scene won this particular award, but I think more often, it's not in a scene like a baptism, or more often in sitcoms and dramas, it's often weddings where religious people look ridiculous. But another episode of NYPD Blue was one where a immigrant Polish family in New York, their child was missing, and I'll read what the Broussard said about it. Andy Sipowicz is a New York detective who, from surface appearances and first impressions, you might call rough-hewn. He's a volatile, gauche, recovering alcoholic, not known for his sensitive behavior. During one episode, he investigated the murder of the only child of two immigrants from Poland. The boy was found in an abandoned lot almost directly across the street from their apartment. The next day, they don't say it, but he was dead. The next day, Andy returned to the scene to find the parents standing on the sidewalk. They pointed to a white bird at the top of a nearby building. The parents had decided that their son's spirit had returned in the form of the bird to assure them that his soul was all right. They asked if the detective could see the light coming from the bird. Andy looked up with the expression of a man who has seen too much death and is not easily surprised. But as he stood next to those grieving parents, he softened. I think there's something there, he said quietly. But too, those are moments in drama that's written by screenwriters in Hollywood, and I don't know what their intent is. I'm going to go out on a limb here and think, I think the Holy Spirit works through this somehow, in some mysterious ways. I remembered, upon reading this, seeing that episode, and remembering how moved I was that someone who doesn't believe much of anything would allow that he maybe saw something. Another episode of a drama that touched me deeply, one of my favorite shows used to be Picket Fences. And I don't know if you watched this show, but there was a family of sheriff, and one of the quirkier characters in the town was the coroner. And he was a pathologist, and a chronically lonely guy who could never, you know, get a date. And one of the characters, a teenage girl, wanted to have a future as a doctor. She was making big plans to be a doctor, but she couldn't get past high school biology. She had to do dissections in her biology class, and she was just stuck there. She couldn't make any progress, and this was one of the subplots going through this movie. So her father told her to stop over and see Carter at the coroner's office. And she talked to him, and he, in the course of this show, there was a dead body there, and he explained to her that he views his conducting an autopsy as entering a cathedral. And he said, I see these bodies as places where I'm allowed to come in and see the creation. And he invites her to put on a mask and a gown and shows her through the human body, the cathedral. It was a beautiful scene. I don't know who's writing this stuff, but I thought that was very fine. Do you have something like that that's happened to you watching TV or a movie when something's just kind of broken in?
What about this pastor that's on now? What is this, Vinny or something like that, where he's up on stage and the people come up and he pushes them and they fall down and he heals them and he can obey?
Oh, yeah, that's a... I know what you mean. That's the
Trinity.
The hilarious spirit or something it's called. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I've heard about it.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking more of dramas or something that's fiction. Well, I think in seeing things that people that we know and people we don't know, an example out of someone over here earlier said, you know, the archetypal piece right now in our culture is and has been Seinfeld. And in Paul's session, you know, the room quickly split into the Seinfeld and the non-Seinfeld people. And that's fine, because nothing is for everybody. I happen to enjoy those people because, and I think one of the reasons is they're single adults, they're living in the city, they're approaching middle age, and they're acting like 14-year-olds. And I can completely relate to that. You know, that's fine. Or, you know, so there are places where TV kind of connects with our own reality. We see people we know or would like to know, or we see a little of our reality. I think another show that was quite urban was Cheers. That's gone now, but that was about a lot of people who lived in an urban setting, and they're looking for community. They're seeking someplace where they can have friends. I think a lot of Cheers episodes spoke very meaningfully to issues of loneliness. And then there's contemporary shows, like I thought of a few that are all urban, Suddenly Susan and Working and Just Shoot Me. These are all people who have glamorous jobs and secure lives, and they're kind of like those characters in the 1930s dance movies, you know, where they're all pretty rich and they're dancing around in big ball gowns, and that was an escape for folks, and they went to see those movies to get out of their depression lives. And I wonder how many people watch these programs about these sort of successful people. Well, they're usually working for magazines, it seems, and or for the mayor or something. They all have good jobs and they make plenty of money. And I think for folks who are maybe in their 20s and don't have a great job, that might be a little bit of an escape. Just my guess. There is a lot that I'm not going to talk about, and one of them is music, because I am getting a little bit out of the loop on music, and I'm feeling insecure about that. But I want to play something for you, and just bring to your attention that there is real beauty in the lyrics of popular songs. Of the cool river, I see baptism, and it flows through the middle of a song that has images of some of the most profound despair and hopelessness. I just had to write some of these lyrics down and read them to you. The rage of love turns inward to prayers of devotion, and these prayers are the constant road across the wilderness. These prayers are the memory of God. And these streets, quiet as a sleeping army, send their battered dreams to heaven for the mother's restless son, who is a witness to, who is a warrior, who denies his urge to break and run, who says, hard times, I'm used to them. The speeding planet turns, I'm used to that. My life's so common, it disappears. Wow. I memorized this song in my car, because I just loved those Brazilian drums, and I had to hear it over and over and over again. And I know this isn't contemporary anymore. I was horrified to pick this tape up and realize that it is a 1990. Oh my gosh. This is the last tape I bought. Oh, I left out the last line. And sometimes even music cannot substitute for tears. Well, there's so much more to talk about in terms of movies that we're not going to have time for, but I, again, like Nothing Sacred, and there are some movies that are very obvious, they're very overt, like The Ten Commandments or something. You can decide what you think about those. I think there are a lot of other movies that are that have a very strong religious theme. Somebody talked about Gandhi here the other night at the forum, and Chariots of Fire, that kind of thing. They're all kind of old movies now. One I'll put on the table right away because someone always it is Babette's Feast. Lots of people love that movie for its message of celebrating and grace. But there are also some wonderful ways to look at a lot of films, and these Broussards really go into some of it, so I'll encourage you to look at this book. Let me read one little chunk of a suggestion they wrote, and that's probably all we'll have time for. This is about the movie Nobody's Fool that Paul Newman made a couple years ago. Nobody's Fool. Sully is an aging handyman who's been a loser most of his life, except in his service to others. In one scene, he notices that a neighbor lady has become confused and is wandering down the street in her nightgown. In a blink, Sully comes to her aid, escorting her home as if she were his date to the prom. It's a movie about a guy who really doesn't have anything going for him except that everybody in town depends on him. and he finally gets the opportunity to run off to Hawaii with the woman of his dreams, and he says, I can't go, you know, people here need me. And he's kind of has a redemption because his own son thinks he's, you know, a creep for leaving when he was young, and he doesn't have a good job or anything, and yet he's the guy in town that takes care of the lady wandering down the street in her nightgown and confronts the local cop for being a bully and has a lot of swagger, but you know, his inner life is not too good until he figures out that he has a calling. He's a servant. He's caring for other people. It's not a movie that sets out to be religious, but I found that it had a grace note, as I say. Boy, I wanted to talk a lot more about movies, but we're out of time, so does anyone have any comments? We have about 3 minutes left. Yeah, Roy.
So is there anything, any life outside of the media?
Do you live lives outside of media?
I don't think so.
Well, coming here is an example.
Pardon?
Coming here is an example.
Coming to Holden is an example of... Yeah.
Yes, but we have a whiteboard up there with words on, so that's media.
Right.
Really? Well, there's information up there.
Sure. Yeah. Anytime you write, this is media. Absolutely. Maybe when I'm lying in my hammock without a book, which just doesn't happen. I don't know. Silence is a whole different subject.
What about the Truman Show? I haven't seen it, but it seems like that's opening up a whole other theme of an ordinary person who becomes the subject of a...
Yeah, the Truman Show is a movie that it just came out before I came up here, so I didn't have time to see it. It has Jim Carrey in it. So, somebody seen it? Anne, tell us.
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow.
And I would say it's real interesting. And there's some very subtle things about it that I think are quite original. I mean, I don't think it's very much about the media,
mm-hmm.
but it's also about freedom and about reality. And there's even some subtle things that are pretty specifically religious.
I'm very eager to see it. There are two movies out this summer that are really throwing a glove in the face of the media industry itself. And one of them is Truman, which looks at what it would be like if you took a human being and put his life on TV
without
his knowledge for the course of, I don't know, 20-some years until he begins to wonder what life is about. And all of his life has been populated by actors. The other is Bulworth, Warren Beatty's new show, which really takes the media and just flings them around. I haven't seen that one either, but I read a lot of movie reviews. Anyone else have an idea that you want to pitch out before we close?
Well, I think that there's a lot of people that, there's probably, I myself do this sometimes, but people are blaming the media for a lot of the violence that's going on today. Like computer games and video games, and also just the violence on TV. But the majority of people, I think, are actually smart enough to know that's not reality and that's not what's supposed to be done. I mean, there is a minority, but also the media, like the news, in a sense, is twisting the truth to make it seem like there's more violence going on than there really is, in the sense that they aren't showing any of the good stuff that's happening, which vastly outnumbers the bad stuff.
So I think this is a really good point, that people are more discerning than we give them credit for. Maybe people see more truth than even the media industry believes we do.
But not
that's what you think.
Not children, I don't think of them for a very negative impact on children.
And children are more vulnerable, maybe not, certainly not ready to make the kind of responsible decisions you're talking about. Yes, Ron.
Yeah, film and drama and all, I think, can be incredible communicators of what you just said. Grace Notes, or one person who looks at film as every film, and even the lowest to the highest, is about the soul trying to recapture something. But I think Robert De Niro's Taxi Driver, Alan Ford, for that one sentence, and he looks right in the camera at you and says, "Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?" And what I often feel is, "Well, are you talking to me?" Because it's that break in relationship that I see as the horror. I was at the Senate convention, and we had these huge mega screens. And in the center was the worship, and it was a beautiful setting. And I struggled constantly between watching the actual people and the screen. And when Carol Plain got up there and sung a solo gospel, I watched the screen. I could see the pores in her skin. It focuses in so clearly that from a distance, I would not know if that was Carol Plain or you, Anne. And so the struggle then is, what made it real for me, real perception, was I know Carol Plain.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hugged her after the thing, it wasn't influenced by it necessarily alone, the media, but she was going to run to see the birth of her grandson, which was much more important than anything that was going on at that convention. And so I struggle, though. I've watched this constantly as what I do when I just sit in a room and you plug in that big screen, bigger than life, and it looks bigger than life, but the life is right there. And I wonder if I'm sensitive anymore to the one actually doing the quote performing, whatever, and then the reality I see on screen.
Yeah, his reality is interesting.
I have no problem, it's an observation.
Yeah, very good question. His reality is interesting as what we see on the screen.
Well, life's pretty boring. I can see why we go for the vicarious car crashes. In fact, one of the things he said, he doesn't drive intentionally, he won't drive a car. And I've drive a lot in the city. And one of the things is the risk people are taking just simply to get in front of you. I mean, it's almost like a suicidal, go ahead, hit me. See what happens to me.
You're talking to me?
Are you talking to me? You know, we even call them assault vehicles.
Thank you for coming. Go to Best Buy.